So I would argue that we have saved the best for last in terms of closing out this very, very special weekend. It's very special, longer than a weekend that started already with some of us being here on Tuesday night. So first and foremost, I want to thank, again, everyone for what you have done to this point, for what you're currently doing and what you're going to do this summer, the amount of Mesiras Nefesh, and really how you're giving of yourself and separating yourself, again, from family and from being a normal person for between 4 to 6 weeks. I cannot thank you enough for what it is you're about to do. I know that, again, as Rabbi Green said last night, none of us are Nevi'im. We can't predict that it's going to be the best summer ever. But God willing, with Hashem's help, that it will be the best summer ever. Hopefully it also, as Rabbi Greenland said on Friday night, it'll be a life-changing summer. That's really what we're about. And the question is, before I introduce Rav Weinberg, who does not need my introduction even a little bit, is what should we walk away with from a wonderful weekend and a wonderful experience that we just went through over the last few days? And there are a number of things that go through my mind as we exit such a special weekend. So number one, hopefully everybody's walking out of here inspired and feeling part of a very special, special movement. And you feel ready. I wish we were getting on a plane tonight, tomorrow, or going, you know, to Baltimore, or whatever it is, because obviously we have a few weeks now in between, and it kind of has to. We have to make this last and do things in between now and then. But hopefully, everybody has gained and feels something very, very special that they can take with them and give over to the kids that, God willing, we are going to spend the next very, very impactful summer with. From a responsibility point of view, and to be a little bit mundane, if I can. I hope the one thing that we take away from the weekend is the word communication. Because really, when it boils down to everything that we're a part of this summer, whatever you're seeing, whatever you're hearing, whatever you're doing, whatever you're reacting to, is all a matter of communication. How you handle yourself, and that's again, especially whether you see something and you need your assistance, and you need to bump it up to your program director, to your assistant director, to your head madrich, head madricha. Communication, really, I believe, is the key to success from a responsibility point of view. I think the three words that perhaps scare me more than any other words in the English language are, I got this. I got this. I've been in summer programs for 4, 5, 6 years. I know how to give over a chabura. I know how to give over Torah. I know how to deal with public school kids. No problem. And so I would beg everyone to realize we don't got this. And there's always people here to assist you. There are always people here to help you who are unbelievable at what they do. Again, your program directors, your madrichim, your head madrichim, head madrichot. I am available as a resource for anybody who wants. So you should never ever think that any of us are too busy. But again, I beg everyone, again, you have the lives of our entire organization and everything we do in our future in your hands. Not only these kids and the 2,400 kids now, but the thousands and thousands of kids that we have in the future years, God willing, are literally in your hands this summer by the decisions you make or don't make and the communication that you take on yourselves. I can't emphasize how key that is. And again, I thank you so much for everything you have done and will continue to do. And please feel free to be in touch. Without further ado, I give you Rav Moshe Tzvi Weinberg.
All right, I don't got this. I'll try my best. It's so nice to be here. I have to say, my children are so upset at myself. I can't really blame my wife. I guess it's more my fault that we weren't here for Shabbos. I said, like, we can sit, you know, like, well, I was like, what are you missing? They're like, everything. It's like, it's such a, for our kids, they wanted so badly to be here, and I wanted so badly to be here. We were singing the David Kotler, like we're singing the Negunim on Shabbos, like we tried to be mishtatef in some way to this this holy gathering. But I'm so glad I was able. Thank you, David, for encouraging me and allowing me to join you for these last couple of minutes together. I'm sure everyone's very tired by now, so if you fall asleep, don't feel bad. It's been a long number of days. But like David was saying a moment ago, you know, being able to walk away from such a Shabbos and to walk away from such more than a weekend of learning together, of talking together, of just connecting with one another, chaval to not take something with us. So you don't have to take anything that I'm going to say, but make sure that you walk out of this beautiful hotel, make sure that you walk away from such an experience and you take something with you. And really, just by way of a karas hatov, I want to thank everyone in the room. I want to thank you for, like David said, you're the front lines. There's so much that goes into. I was just talking to some of the coordinators who are working very much behind the scenes to make sure everything runs this summer. And there's so much. There's so much that goes into planning any one of these trips or any piece of these summer programs. And it's like so not my skill set. So I get so overwhelmed just talking to people who are responsible for the buses and the hotels and the locations and the food and the this and the health insurance. It's totally overwhelming. And there's so much that happens. But at the end of the day, with our overwhelming hakaras hatov to all the people behind the scenes, some who maybe you don't even recognize are really shaping the framework for this to happen. My main hakaras hatov, and I think all of our hakaras hatov, is really to the people sitting in this room right now. Because you're the people, you're the advisors, you're the counselors, you're the madrichim and madrichot who are on the front lines, who are going to determine what type of summer it's going to be for these kids. That these teens should have the best summer ever is really, at the end of the day, is going to be the relationship with you. A couple of decades ago, there was a cognitive psychologist named Daniel Simons, and he did an unbelievable experiment. I'm curious if you've heard of it, just by a show of hands. Are you familiar with the invisible gorilla experiment? Yes, by a show of hands. Okay, nice amount of people have heard of it. How many of you fell for it the first time you did it? Okay, so it works, it's true. For those who don't know, Daniel Simons, along with one of his colleagues, cognitive scientist, experimental psychologist, they decided that they were going to create a video of individuals passing basketballs around. Three people wearing white t-shirts, three people wearing black t-shirts. And at the start of the video, you're told, keep track, don't be distracted by those wearing the black t-shirts passing the ball around. Focus on those who are wearing the white t-shirts and try to count, try to notice how many times the ball is passed. And the players are, you know, the individuals are weaving in and out of each other. It's a little bit distracting. And at the end, you're like, oh, okay, I was able to follow it. 16 passes by the end. And then, all of a sudden, it appears on the screen, but did you notice the gorilla that walked across the screen in the middle of this, you know, ball game, beating on its chest? And you're like, whoa, what? A gorilla walked across the screen? And you watch the video again, and lo and behold, this big black gorilla, this black gorilla costume, walks right across the screen, and you totally missed it. And about 50% of people miss it. About 50% of people who watch this video don't even realize something that's right in front of their eyes. Or if you've ever seen those, you know, those like mind-bending 3D chalk on the street or sidewalk, you know, drawings. So if you look at them from most angles, you don't actually see anything. If you get just the right angle, all of a sudden you see this like crazy picture. It almost looks like a swimming pool that you could jump into. And you get just the right angle, the guy looks like he's putting his foot into the water. And it's a reminder, and what Daniel Simons and his colleagues published based on that video is that a person sometimes becomes so attentive to one thing that you don't see something else. And it can be something that's literally right in front of your face. As Jews, so much of what Hashem asks of us is to train our eyes and to train our mind to see things in the right way. To find that right angle, to be attentive to the right things, not to become, in the wrong way, hyper-focused on one thing to the exclusion of something else, that I miss something that's happening right in front of my eyes. The Sfas Emes explains, Lo sasur acharei levavchem v'acharei neichem. Don't stray, lo sasuru, don't stray after your heart and after your eyes. The Sfas Emes says, your eyes can deceive you. Physical reality can deceive you. You could think that you know what you're looking at, and in truth, it's something totally different. It's something more, it's something else. That inattentional blindness that Daniel Simon studied and that is so true for most people, right, is something that we need to think about as we prepare for the summer. As we think about how am I going to approach my responsibilities this summer? How am I going to look at the teens who I have a relationship with, who I'm responsible to provide for, and to not become hyper-focused on people wearing the white shirts, right, to the point that I'm not able to notice the gorilla walking across the screen. So I want to use that to challenge us. I want to use that reality to challenge us to ask ourselves three questions. It's really one question, but we'll make it three questions. First and foremost, are we noticing? Are we paying attention? And if we are paying attention, and if we're properly paying attention, so exactly who are we noticing? And more than that, what exactly about them are we noticing? Let's go step by step. I remember my first summer on the bus to sleepaway camp. I was going into fifth grade, and I grew up in Philadelphia. I didn't know too many kids going to camp that summer. I had one friend from Philadelphia, one guy my age. And I remember being on the bus, and I remember being so nervous. I didn't know all these like cool New York, New Jersey kids, you know. I didn't know any of these. I didn't know anyone. And I'm not like a super shy person, but I was a little bit withdrawn, a little bit reserved. And I sat down on the bus next to a total stranger. And I'm on my way on this long bus ride. And it sounds crazy, but to this day, I have such fond feelings and hakaras hatov to the way that this kid who I sat next to on the bus shared his Game Boy with me. We're sitting on the bus, and at one point this kid turns to me and he's like, "Oh, would you like to play some video games?" And it's so weird because I'm 40 years old now and I still think it was like this great act of chesed, you know? That like he noticed, and again, I don't know if I was even projecting, I don't know if I looked nervous, I don't know if I looked, you know, out of place. I don't know if anything about my body language or anything that I said or didn't say. And maybe as a kid, he was a year younger than me. He was going into fourth grade. And it could be he was just a nice kid. But he noticed me. He noticed me. He paid attention to me. And he offered something that made me feel a little bit more comfortable. And literally to this day, I have a tremendous sense of hakaras hatov. That someone took the time to notice me. Our teacher and our friend, Rabbi David Beshefkin, wrote a beautiful piece online. I don't know if you had a chance to see it in Tablet magazine, on the Siyam on Maseches Chagiga. A beautiful piece, and he talks about one of the karbanos that we bring. Three times a year we come to Beis HaMikdash. Aliyah L'Regel, we come to Beis HaMikdash, Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos. We bring a variety of karbanos, and one of the karbanos has a very curious name. The Olas Re'iyah. The karban Ola that we bring upon seeing. Shalosh pa'amim b'shana yira'eh kol zechorchas p'nei ha'adon Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Three times a year, the Torah describes such a strange phenomenon. Yira'eh kol zechorchas p'nei ha'adon Hashem. Come to Yerushalayim to see the face of Hashem. Friends, we don't believe that Hashem has a face the way that we have a face. Hashem doesn't have a body. We come up to Beis HaMikdash to see the face of Hashem. What on earth does that mean? What does it mean to come to Beis HaMikdash, to see Hashem face to face? And not only that, Chazal, the Gemara so beautifully explains that we're not just going to see Hashem, but we're going to be seen by Hashem. Kederech shabal liros kach balei ros. To see and to be seen. What does that mean? Why is that such an important part of the Aliyah L'Regel? That's what the Yom Tov is about. Coming to Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, coming to Beis HaMikdash, to have this face-to-face encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem doesn't have a body. What are we looking to see? What does it mean to be seen by Hashem? So Rabbi Beshefkin quoted a beautiful little poem by a columnist named Caleb Madison. He says, what does it mean to be seen? That's a phrase people talk about. What does it mean to feel seen, to be noticed? So he quoted the following little poem. What does it mean when I look at the screen at a show or a meme, and I say I feel seen? What does it mean to feel seen? To feel seen means that someone is connecting to the experience that I'm going through in a deep way. That I feel that we have something in common. That we're experiencing something together. To find comfort in the shared recognition of the experience. That's what it means to feel seen. And I could tell you that every single kid on our program, whether it's the shy and withdrawn type of teen, or whether it's the outgoing one who looks like he or she has a lot of friends, they want to be recognized by you. They want someone to notice them, to be paying attention to what's happening with them. I shared a story with some of you recently, but I have to share it again for those who haven't heard it. There was a Rav in France, a very successful Rav, a big Talmud Chacham. He had built a beautiful community, and he shared with his Kehila at some point more recently, what was it that motivated him to try to reach his potential. He wasn't bragging, God forbid, but he was acknowledging the fact that Baruch Hashem, he had accomplished a lot in his life. He had built a beautiful community. He became a big Talmud Chacham. What gave him the encouragement to do such a thing? He says, I'll tell you. He said, I was a little kid, growing up in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh, He said, unfortunately, I lost my father when I was very young. And my mother provided for me, my siblings. It was very, very difficult. Financially, it was very, very difficult. And he said, I never had, it's so sad to say, he said, I never had really anything of my own. Nothing was really mine. I didn't own anything. We had so few possessions. Even the clothing that I had, he said, it wasn't my own. I never owned my own shirt. Can you imagine? Every shirt that I got was handed down from others. I never owned. My mother says to me one summer, she said, we're going to start saving up. I know how badly you want your own white shirt. And she says, by this Rosh Hashanah, we're going to make it a reality. We're going to make it happen. She said, we're going to start saving up. Every little bit of money that we have, we're going to put a little pushka, a little box, and we're going to start saving up for months from the beginning of the summer. By the time we get to Rosh Hashanah, I'm going to buy you a nice, crisp, new white shirt for Yontif. And this kid says, Ima, it's okay. I know that's very difficult. That's a lot to ask. She said, no, I know it's important to you. We're going to find a way to do it. I don't know how we're going to do it. Can you imagine? I don't know how we're going to do it. Save up to buy a single article of clothing, a single new white shirt, but we're going to do it. And they started saving, and they started saving, and they started saving. And Rosh Hashanah finally rolled around, and the kid bought himself a new white shirt. He was so excited. He was so excited. He's looking at himself in the mirror, you know, he's pressing his shirt, he's ready. He goes Erev Rosh Hashanah to Shul. Mincha of Erev Rosh Hashanah, he walks out his front door. He runs into a neighbor. He figures the neighbor's going to say, wow, look at you, you look great. Not a word. No one noticed. He figures, okay, it's Erev Rosh Hashanah. People are busy, they're rushing, everyone's trying to get to Shul. I'm sure after davening, people go over to each other. You know, Shana Tova, Gut Yor. I'm sure someone will notice me. Someone will say, Titchadesh, you know, wow, you look great, nice shirt. And nothing. His friends, his neighbors, nothing. And he walks out of the shul and he's so bummed out. He says, how can it be no one noticed? And then he starts to think, like, maybe I'm making too much of a big deal out of this. Maybe I'm being so silly and I'm being so self-absorbed. And he's all confused and he's all bummed out and he's feeling very lonely. He walks out of the shul, he's making his way down the streets of Yerushalayim, he runs into a large group of Hasidim. And he turns to someone in that crowd, he sees it looks like they're heading somewhere, he says, where's everyone going? We're going to the Ger Rebbe. The Beis Yisrael, the fourth Ger Rebbe. The main Ger Beis Medrash is not far from here. It's about a block away from here. We're going to wish a good Yontiv and to get a quick bracha. To get a good Yar from the Rebbe. All right, this kid's feeling down on his luck. So he figures, okay, so he falls into line. He makes his way with this crowd of Hasidim through the streets of Yerushalayim. They come to the big Beis Medrash of the Ger Hasidim. And Kedarko B'Kodesh, huge line. And the Gabayim are pushing people through, No time to stop and schmooze, just go by. The Rebbe's, maybe shaking hands, giving a little nod. Gidyontiv, Gityor, Gidyontiv, Gityor. And everyone's making their way through. Finally, it's this kid's turn. He's standing face to face with the Ger Rebbe for half a second. And the Ger Rebbe pauses him. This kid's standing a couple feet away. He goes like this. He calls him, pulls him close. Sticks out his finger and he signals to him. He says, come here. And he grabs the kid's shirt. He grabs onto the kid's white shirt. And he starts to feel the material. And he gives him this look. He looks him in the eyes. And he says, psh. That's it. And he grabs another part of the kid's shirt. He starts to feel the material. Psh. This Rav in France, decades later, said, you want to know what changed my life? Two letters that I heard from the Ger Rebbe, the letter Pei and the letter Shin. Psh. So that was it. He said, I couldn't wrap my head around the fact that my friends, my neighbors, the people who knew me, the people who should have understood how that white shirt made me feel, none of them noticed me. And this leader of thousands, on Rosh Hashanah no less, as busy as he was able to somehow identify, to look at me and to somehow to notice and identify that that's what I needed. That I needed to be seen. And without even saying one word, he was able to transform my life. My friends, that's the opportunity that you have this summer. To be people who are attentive, to be people who are noticing, who have the sensitivity to recognize it may not mean a lot to you, but it might mean the world to someone else. And what does it mean to be seen as well, to be seen by our teens? To be the role models that they so badly need in this world today? In this complicated and confusing world? Remember, I read an article in Mishpacha magazine a couple of years ago. Avi Shek. He's a prominent lawyer, does a lot of good work on behalf of Klal Yisrael. He was reflecting on the life of his grandmother, Mrs. Renee Shek, of blessed memory. He said, my grandmother founded in 1943, she founded Shek's Bakery, the famous bakery in Borough Park. Why did she do that? She had lost her husband, was a Rav. She needed to provide for her children. She built a bakery, and she was really good at it. And like a good baker, she'd get up 3 o'clock in the morning, busy making all sorts of cakes and desserts, all sorts of things. He said, eventually my grandmother retired. She officially stopped baking. But he said, my grandmother never, ever, ever stopped baking. My grandmother was always baking. She was baking for the ladies behind the cash register at Waldbaum's. She was baking for the nurses in Elder Plan. She was baking for all of Borough Park. And she was especially baking every year a special cake for a fellow by the name of George Neuwirth. Renee Shek had a good friend, Mrs. Neuwirth. Her husband was a prominent doctor. They had a son, George. Those who have a connection to Camp Hask might know of George. Maybe you know George's tree. And on George's birthday every year, Mrs. Shek would bake a special cake for George. And Avi, her grandson, said, I was often the delivery boy. I would bring the cake to George. My grandmother would remind me it's not just about dropping off a cake for his birthday, but it's about spending some time with him, talking to him, making him feel good. And he said, my grandmother passed away at the age of 92. It was shortly after Pesach. He said, the night before she passed away, she called my sister. And she said, you know, this Thursday is George's birthday. It's coming up this Thursday. And she said, I don't think that I'm going to be in the world anymore. And I need you to remember to bake a cake for George. Don't forget George's birthday. And Avi Shek said his grandmother passed away the next morning. And he writes there in that article in Mishpacha Magazine, he says, can you imagine that a person in the final hours of their life is thinking about, is noticing, is paying attention to someone else? Is somehow mindful, is cognizant of that? At the age of 92, in her final moments in this world, she's thinking about someone would appreciate if I dropped off a birthday cake? But Avi Shek said something else. He said, but you know what? My grandmother didn't really need to remind us to do that because it was so much who she was that it became so much of who we are. We, through osmosis, we absorbed that. She was such a role model. She so much practiced what she preached, or she preached through her practice, that she didn't have to tell us anything. She didn't have to remind us anything. Shabbos, for those of us who are from America, which is most of us, it was Parshas Emor. And the Parsha begins, Emor el kohanim b'nei Aaron v'amarta. And Rashi says, what's the Emor v'amarta? What's the double lashon, Emor v'amarta? What's the redundancy? So Rashi says, he quotes the Gemara in Yevamos, Daf Kuf Yudalid, Lahazir gedolim ala katanim. That the Torah is telling us, Lahazir gedolim ala katanim, the older kohanim have to take care of the younger kohanim. They have to teach them about the prohibition of becoming tamei meis. So I saw a gevaldik vart from Rabbi Yisrael Meir Druck. Rav Druck Shlita says, I don't understand. So we understand there's a value in educating the next generation. We get that. That much we get. We also understand that in chinuch, you have to be able to model the behavior in order to get someone else to do it. If you're not going to be it, to see and to be seen, if you're not going to be seen as being authentic in whatever it is that you're preaching or trying to share this summer, it's not going to go. So we get that. But Rav Druck says, why dafka here in the context of Tumas Meis is the Torah teaching us this concept of Lahazir Gedolim Ala Katanim? Why specifically here? We get it. You can teach it somewhere else, this notion that the adults have to look out for the children. That the adults have to have good communication, like David was saying, with themselves in order to make sure that everyone is communicating properly. You have to set the tone. You have to lead the way. And to lead by example. Why specifically in this context of Tumas Meis is this lesson being taught? So he says such a beautiful idea. Such a simple and true idea. Think about little Moshe Cohen. He's a Cohen. He's hanging out with his friends. They're non-Kohan. And they decide to go for a walk. I don't know, they're going down the block to 7-Eleven to buy a Slurpee. And they happen to be walking past the cemetery. And there's a branch of a tree that's hanging over the wall, extending from the cemetery over the sidewalk. So most of the kids don't think twice about walking under that branch. And they don't have to because they're not Kohan. But little Moshe Cohen has to think, hold on, I'm a little bit different. I have to hold myself to a little bit of a higher standard. It's not that my friends are doing anything that's so terrible. They're not kohanim. They're not chayiv. They're not expected to be mindful of that. It's not part of their obligation in this world. But I do. Because my parents showed me a different model in my home because we're a family of kohanim. Says Rav Druk, so much of what we're trying to model is how do we model a higher standard? In a way that we're not looking down at something else. We're not saying what the other kids are doing is bad. That's not what this is about. But it's painting an image of something holy, something bigger. Again, these kids are looking at you. Think about the people. Just think for a second. Think about counselors. Think about teachers. Think about rebbeim. Think about an older sibling. Think about people. Think about older people in your life who in some way that maybe they don't even realize, and it could be a single moment, were able to influence your life, to create a model of something for you to strive for, to want to live a little bit bigger, to strive for something a little bit higher. And again, that's the first question we ask ourselves, to see and to be seen. Am I noticing? Am I paying attention? Do I realize the needs of the teens who are around me? And as my teens look at me, as they look at us, are we being those role models that they can look up to strive for something a bit more? And then when we look at our teens, we have to ask ourselves, who do I see? Who do I see in front of me? You know, David mentioned, this summer, Amir Tzashem, 2,400. It's a crazy number. Is that a record? It's a record. All right, give yourself a round of applause. It's a record. It's amazing. It's a day to celebrate. It's amazing. Big numbers are impressive, right? But they can also be overwhelming. Because what does that mean? What does that mean for me to, you know, to think about that, right? Again, for the people who are, I have to look out for all 2,400 of our teens, of our campers, to whatever individual program I'm on, or whatever bus I'm on, or whatever little chabura that I'm giving. It's very easy to be overwhelmed by big numbers. It's very easy to be impressed by big numbers. But what about noticing individuals? Who am I talking to? Are we talking about 2,400? What does that mean? What does that mean to create a summer experience, the best summer ever, for 2,400 people? What about the individual? You know, they were talking to the Altar of Slobodka one time. The Slobodka Yeshiva was, you know, the greatest of its type in its time. And they said to the Altar of Slobodka, almost someone asked him, you know, what's it like being the Rosh Yeshiva? What's it like being the visionary of such a large and prominent yeshiva? And the Altar of Slobodka said, I don't look at myself as having a yeshiva of hundreds of bachrim. He said, I look at my yeshiva as being made up of lots of individuals. Because each individual, each bachrim in my yeshiva, each person learning under my watch, is a world unto himself. When we're on a basketball court this summer, we're on a tiul, when we're online handing out food for lunch, and maybe even most importantly, when we're sitting down to learn Torah with some of our teens, what are we teaching? Are we teaching a text? We're teaching a text, it's true. We're teaching an idea, it's true, we're teaching an idea. But we're teaching people. We're teaching individuals. We're trying to have a hashpah on a single person. It's so easy to fall into that trap, like I want to change lives, Lashon Rabbim this summer, you know, plural. I'm going to have a tremendous hashpah on, you know, countless people. You know what it means? Who are we talking to when I talk to one person? Who is that individual that I'm speaking to when I'm speaking to a single individual? Rav Shlomo Hyman was the great Rosh Yeshiva of Torah Vadas. Lived a relatively short life, passed away at the age of 52. Rav Shraga Feivel brought him to America, brought him to New York in 1935. I probably saved him from the Holocaust. Tremendous Rosh Yeshiva, tremendous mind. Rav Shlomo Hyman, the famous story goes that it was a snowy day. And he shows up to shir. He's teaching in Torah Vadas. And about four students showed up that day. The room was not packed. The shir was not full. There were four students there. And Rav Shlomo Hyman got up and he gave his shir for an hour and a half, 2 hours, an intense lumdus shir, an intense gemara shir. And he was jumping and he was screaming and he was shvitzing. He was dripping by the end. And the four guys were sitting there learning with him. And he says, afterwards, the Talmidim look at him and say, Rebbe, you know, it's amazing. I'm so happy that you made it out on this snow day to come in. But, you know, you're like, you're speaking as if you're speaking to Madison Square Garden at the Siyam HaShas or something. Like, it's just the four of us. And you're speaking with such energy and enthusiasm. And Rav Shlomo Hyman said, Do you think that I'm just speaking to the four of you? Do you really think that I'm speaking to four individuals in the room? He said, I'm speaking to you. I'm speaking to your children. I'm speaking to your grandchildren. I'm speaking to all the people you're going to meet one day. I'm trying to give over Torah in a way where I recognize that the person who I'm speaking to is so much more than the person that I'm speaking to. When you're sitting with one individual, who do you see? And it's not just about, by the way, seeing, oh, this person is really made up of hundreds of people. But to be able to recognize that on some level. Rav Shimon Schwab asked the question. The Torah tells us, as Klal Yisrael leave Mitzrayim, it says, Chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. The Jewish people left Mitzrayim, Chamushim. And Rashi says in one of his explanations, what is Chamushim? Davar acher. Chamushim echad mechamisha yotzu. One out of five Jews left Mitzrayim. And four out of five were left behind. That's what Rashi says. You open up the Medrash, the Mechilta, there are other opinions. Not one in five left Mitzrayim, one out of 50 left Mitzrayim. Another opinion, not one out of 50, one out of 500 left Mitzrayim. My friends, you guys know how astronomical that number is? If we talk about the number that actually left Mitzrayim, you multiply it by one out of five, that's one out of 500. So how many Jews were actually in Mitzrayim? Is that historically accurate? Is that true? Could that possibly be true? Rav Shimon Schwab, in his Mayan Beis HaShoeva, says that, no, you have to understand. Let's go back to the first broken relationship, really, of all time, on a certain level, in terms of a Bein Adam L'Chavero, and that's Cain and Hevel. Two brothers were jealousy led, literally, to murder. And by Cain and Hevel, we find the Torah tells us, Hashem says, Hashem turns to Cain, Vayomer me osisa kol demei achicha tzorakim alayim in adama. Demei achicha, your brother's bloods, plural, is screaming out to me from the ground. And Rashi says, demei achicha, your brother's bloods, plural, why is it plural? Damo vidam zar Yosef. Not only did you kill your brother Hevel, but by ruining this opportunity to have closeness with Hevel, not only is Hevel lost, Hevel's children are lost, Hevel's grandchildren are lost, Hevel's great-grandchildren are lost. Do you understand how devastating? It was bad enough you killed Hevel. But Cain, think about what happened with this lost opportunity. You could have been a brother. You could have inspired him. You could have changed the trajectory of his life. And instead you robbed him of life, and by extension you robbed his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren. Says Rav Schwab, and it's a scary thought, and it's a very big part of what we're trying to rebuild. By trying to inspire, by trying to educate, by trying to uplift. Says Rav Schwab, when we talk about 6 million Jews dying in the Holocaust, Rav Schwab says that was the day the Holocaust ended. That was the moment that Hitler was no longer, and the Nazis, Yimach Shom, were no longer able to kill Jews. But says Rav Schwab, and he was writing this, he said, now we have to look at it 50 years later, 60 years later, 70 years later, 80 years later. It's not 6 million anymore. If those 6 million would have lived, how many children would they have had? How many grandchildren would they have had? Rav Schwab says, maybe that's the pshat in the Mechilta. When we first left Mitzrayim, it was one, maybe 1/5 left. But on a certain level, it's 1/50th. And on a certain level, it's 1/500th. Every person is a world that's made up of so many other worlds, and we have to recognize that. Rav Schwab, in his selected writings, which were published, he describes a Shabbos that he spent with the Chafetz Chaim in 1930. Chafetz Chaim was towards the end of his life. He passed away in 1933. The Gadol Hador, Rav Schwab, was a young yeshiva bacher, Rav Shimon Schwab. And he says, he tells many, many stories from that amazing Shabbos with the Chafetz Chaim. But he says he remembers walking into the Chafetz Chaim by Shalosh Shuras. So the Chafetz Chaim ate a little meager Shalosh Shuras, and then he began to speak. And the Chafetz Chaim turned to the people who were gathered there, and he said, we have to go out, we have to bring Jews back. We have to be involved in Kiruv Rechokim, Chafetz Chaim said. Teach something, anything. Teach Shabbos, teach Torah, teach Kashrus. Teach Taras HaMishpacha. The Chafetz Chaim said, I'm prepared to do it myself. I'll travel anywhere that I can go to inspire one person, whatever it takes. He said the Chafetz Chaim gave such a drasha. He didn't say any powerful stories or any particularly good vartlach, but he said it in such a real way. And then Rav Schwab writes, he says, and then the Chafetz Chaim started to bench. And he was benching. He was benching on Shalosh Shuras. And as he's benching, he's saying the words of benching. He's davening, he's benching, Rachim na al Yisrael amecha. And he said, the Chavetz Chaim, he said he burst out crying. Rachim na al Yisrael amecha. He was saying to Hashem, and he was saying to everyone gathered there, have rachmanis on the Jewish people around you. Understand the opportunity that we have to uplift a single person. Like Rav Shlomo Hyman, who was looking at that classroom, that meager classroom, and saying, you know what, this little chabura, with these four guys or these four girls, I'm talking to the history of Klal Yisrael. I'm talking to the future. I'm talking to so many people. And it's such an opportunity. So who do I see sitting in front of me? It's a whole world. And again, to recognize and to appreciate that individual, but to appreciate so much more that's contained within that individual. And last but not least, when I'm looking at that individual, and I become a person who notices, and I see who they are, I see who I'm talking to, I understand that individual, I understand what they're made up of, but what exactly, what part of them do I see the most? And of course, the answer has to be, that I have to remember that I'm talking to their neshama. I have to recognize the neshama behind all of the outer trappings, whatever the external presentation is, however they dress, however they present themselves, wherever they're coming from, whatever the context of their life is, I have to be able to look past all of them. Going back to where we started, where I become hyper-focused in one way that I miss the main thing, I'm talking to a Jewish neshama. I have to remind myself that time and time again. I've told this story probably 1,000 times, but I'll tell it 1,000 more times until I believe it with every fiber of my being and you believe it with every fiber of your being. Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld, Rabbi Green and I talk about Rabbi Shlomo Freifeld. Anytime we see each other, we talk about Shlomo. Shlomo Freifeld was the greatest. He knew how to see people for who they were. Rabbi Freifeld was sitting on a bench one time with Rabbi Amos Bunim. And they were sitting together and they were talking. And there was a young fellow, a Jewish kid, a teenager. He was sitting across the way, sitting on the grass, whatever, playing his guitar. And Rabbi Freifeld pointed to that child, that young man who was sitting across, and he said, Rabbi Bunim, do you see that fellow over there? So he says, who? Which one? He says, that one right over there. You see that guy sitting over there? So he says, who? Which one? The one with the ripped jeans? No. You see the one who's sitting over there? Who, that the kid with the guitar and the Grateful Dead t-shirt? No. Do you see the one who's sitting over there? What, the one with the long hair and the ripped jeans? There's only one kid over there. Rebbe, what are you talking about? Right, Rabbi says, no, but do you see him? Do you see his neshama? You're telling me what he looks like. You're telling me about his clothing. You're sizing him up based on the way that he's dressed or the music that he listens to. Or even the language that he speaks. But do you see him? Rabbi Freifeld says, do you see him? Do you see his neshama? The Sefer HaChinuch, this past week's parsha, has an unbelievable line. The Sefer HaChinuch says, we're told, the Kohen is told, Linefesh lo yitama ba'amav. You're not allowed to be tamei lenefesh. What do you mean tamei lenefesh? Tumas Mei says, when the nefesh has left the body, and you come into contact with a body. It doesn't say tamei lenefesh, the Torah says tamei leguf. The Sefer HaChinuch in Mitzvah Reish Samach Gimel says an amazing thing. The Sefer HaChinuch says the pasuk refers to the guf as the nefesh, ki hu ha'ikar. That when we're talking about a dead body, it's still, we can't call this Jewish person a body, because that's not what a Jew is. Because the nefesh is who the person really is. Mesilas Yesharim warns us, when you're walking in a dark room, one of two things could happen. You cannot see something that's there, or even worse, you could think you're seeing something like we started with, and really it's something else. Be so careful this summer that you have the opportunity to see Jewish neshamos, wherever they're holding in their journey, wherever they're up to. And I could tell you, as a person who's been formally and informally in education for what feels like a really long time now, I promise you, some of the greatest success stories is the kid who you would have thought is not interested. The one with the folded arms in the corner, the one who says, I'm not ready to learn. I'm not open, I'm not inspired, I'm not ready to grow, I'm not ready to hear it. If you see their neshama in the right way, and you treat them with the respect that they deserve, you'll see that you're able to change their life. This week, Amir Tzashem is Lag Ba'Omer. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai spent 12 years in a cave, he came out of the cave, and he was so frum, he was so on fire for Torah, that unfortunately he didn't know how to look at people. He didn't know how to appreciate his fellow Jews. He was burning people up with his eyes. He had no patience for a person who didn't get it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Rashbi, to the Heilige Tanner, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, he says, Rabbi Shimon, go back to the cave. I can't have you come out to my world and not know how to appreciate and to see Jews in the right way. And he comes out of the cave 1 year later, and it's a different Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's a different Rashbi. It's a Rashbi who loves and makes space for every type of Jew. And he sees a fellow running in the marketplace with Hadassim on Erev Shabbos. Tzadikim explain, the secret of the Hadassim is a Gemara in Sukkah on Daf Lamed Beis. The Gemara says the Hadas, if you look at the Hadas, the leaves cover the branch in such a way that it hides the branch beneath all the leaves. But that's hinting that there's something hidden here. There's something mysterious that's hidden here. When Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai saw that Jew running with the Hadas, he reminded himself, this Jew on the surface may not be the finest of Yidden, but there's something hidden here. And I just saw this week such an amazing chiddush from Rav Avram Tzvi Kluger Shlita. He said, you know who that Jew running with the Hadas was in the marketplace? I don't know where he got this idea, but if Tzadikim say it, I'm ready to believe it. Rav Kluger says that it was the same Jew that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai saw when he came out of the cave 1 year earlier. The same Jew that he couldn't look at. The same Jew he couldn't recognize any good. That same Jew who he thought was losing himself in all the shtuyot of this world. That same Jew 1 year later, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai changed his perspective. He learned to be attentive in a different way. And he saw something totally different. Lubavitcher Rebbe would stand for hours on Sunday handing out dollars. An elderly lady once said to him, Rebbe, don't you ever get tired? Don't you ever want to sit down and just rest a little bit? And Lubavitcher Rebbe, Kedarko Bekodesh, said so simply, when a person is counting diamonds, do they get bored? Do they get tired? Lubavitcher Rebbe said to me, these Jews are diamonds. The ones I've met, the ones I haven't met, every single one is as precious as a diamond. So I want to give you all a bracha. I want to bless you for the Siyata Deshmaya this summer. To be people first and foremost, like we said, who are noticing, who are paying attention, who are attentive to the needs. Remember that story of the Beis Yisrael. Psh, he noticed that kid. He knew what he needed. And he transformed his life just by noticing him with sensitivity, with care, with depth. To recognize who's in front of you, both the individual and everything that they represent, the trajectory of their life that's contained within them, their future doros that are all bottled up inside of them. And perhaps most important of all, to recognize what they really are. Which part of this person am I seeing? Am I seeing their chitzonias or am I recognizing their neshama? Am I identifying their pnimius? And I promise you, if we become Jews who have those eyes of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai when he came out of the cave that second time, if we have the eyes of the Ger Rebbe, if we have the sensitivity of Renee Schick on her deathbed remembering to send the cake to George, or Lubavitcher Rebbe counting diamonds on a Sunday afternoon, then I promise you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give us the Siyata Deshmaya to be able to change lives, to have such an impact on these teens, and Amir Tzashem, to give tremendous, tremendous Nachas Ruach to Avinu Shabbat Shemayim. Thank you so much.
Buses are leaving in 5 minutes. Buses are pulling out in 5 minutes.